Well, today is September 9, 2017. I'm Mary Mullen, and I'm talking to Mary Beth O'Halloran, and I'm going to be asking some questions about her involvement in Prairie, which was back in the 1980s. And we're doing this interview at Bob and Barb Parks' home on Hammersley Road in Madison, Wisconsin. So I want to ask the first question about how and when you got involved at Prairie.
Well, I came in 84, and I had just moved to Madison and was looking for a church. I tried out First Society, and nobody talked to me the whole time I was there, except to ask me if I would vote for them. And when I said I just moved here, she walked away. So I came to Prairie, and the Bullens were the greeters that day, and they asked me all kinds of things and took me over to meet a musician and took me over to meet some skiing people, and then they sat with me. And it must have been Valentine's Day by then, because of whatever the service was, the activity, it was intergenerational, and the activity was to go make Valentines, and you could go make cards, or you could go down and sit on the floor and do a great big construction paper one. So I went on the floor and had a good time with a bunch of people there. Afterwards, everybody came up and said, "Oh, we don't always do this. It'll be okay. I'll have a speaker next time." But I had loved that whole service, so that's how I got started. And then at the annual meeting that spring, or almost summer, that's when I joined officially. And right after that is when I became the Director of Religious Education.
Well, so how did you hear about the RE position?
It must have been at Prairie. Maybe it was announced at the service or at the annual meeting or something. Because I didn't go there for that position. It just happened to be.
Okay.
Great timing.
So tell me about your RE director experience.
It was wonderful. If my father hadn't died, I would have stayed forever. So it was just, I've been with a lot of other churches now and have seen how they run their RE programs and how their committees work and everything. And I think Prairie, it just had it right. And the idea of rotating three teachers so nobody burns out right away. There were really good curricula in each, I think it was a three-year class size, first, second, third grade. And each curriculum was appropriate for that age. And the committee all knew what the curricula were about, and they really paid attention to that. There were really dedicated teachers, and I think part of it was that they could get that one Sunday off occasionally so that they weren't burning out. There were extra activities. Nifty Gifty is what it was called, where the kids made gifts for Christmas out of leftover stuff. They used little film canisters and other things that were really the adults had been collecting for months, really. I think there was something called a J-term or something like that. Does that sound right? Where different people spoke lit classes during January.
Oh, I don't remember what it's
called. I think there was something like that. So other adults besides the teachers got to interact with the kids, and the kids got to know those other adults. And then one of the biggest pieces was the intergenerational services that you were leading a lot of the time. Process of planning those and having all those creative ideas flowing around and watching the kids get involved. The things that they did, I remember one intergenerational service where the bunny rabbit came and led the bunny hop was part of it. So it was kind of entertaining and yet also teaching the values and the theologies involved.
Did they have overnights, or did you have overnights at that time?
There were some, yeah. Not a lot, I don't think.
Once or twice.
There was one at Parks, actually. That's why I was at your house.
Kids.
Yes.
Yeah. That's, I remember that. But
by Lake Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And that's Bob Park, by the way, speaking, and it was Barbara just a second ago.
And Robin must have been a second grader at that point.
That range, yeah. I think might have been that class, actually, that age group.
Yeah, it was. Because Bob was one of the teachers.
Yeah.
What were the years that you were there again?
84 to 86.
So like the fall of 84, summer of 84?
I came in January or February, and then I became RE director in June. Yeah, and then I actually left in June or July in 86, 2 years later.
Two years later.
Yeah. I don't know if it had, I think it had been taught before. We taught about your sexuality.
Yes.
To a group of 6th through 9th graders, kind of expanding the age range a little bit. But that was just such a wonderful experience to see those kids learning about sexuality, but in a healthy, healthful way.
And was it Dan Lauchs that was
yes,
your school
yeah.
teacher? I know you taught an adult group, too,
right.
for 5 or 6 or 8 weeks, and that was really good.
Yeah, yeah, that was fun, too. Totally different experience.
Well, so then we have another question, like, what are your most treasured memories of Prairie People and events?
The intergenerational services, just across the board, those I thought were wonderful. I've tried to bring those to other churches since then. But I think Prairies were the most successful.
We talked about one. Can you remember any of the others in specific?
Oh, yeah, there was one at Thanksgiving that had to do with immigration, I think. And, well, the one about Valentine's Day.
Was that the one where they made the huge Valentine?
Yeah, on the floor, big, not construction paper. What's
we have a picture
roller.
Of Rachel, by Rachel Siegfried by that.
Oh, okay, that could be the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to take a look at the picture.
Well, and one of those was taken to Washington, D.C. and given to President
Reagan.
Really?
And then he sent a thank you that said, "Thank you for thinking of me."
Well, that's fair.
All right, some other events or treasured memories of Prairie People, maybe? And
yeah, there was a social life that I'd never had before. And things like little skiing events just, you know, after Prairie. Go to probably the Arboretum or someplace and cross-country skiing. The folk dances, they were pretty regular. And I loved doing that. And this sounds strange, but the committee meetings actually were one of the joys. And it was the program committee, and you were the chair of that, and it was the RE committee. And I want to say maybe it was Eileen Nettleton, but I'm not sure about that, who was chair then. And they were just humane. They tended to, committees aren't always, but they tended to be like late afternoon, where people could get there if they've been, you know, out busy all day, and they could just pick up a snack and bring it to the potluck. Or if people had been staying home, they could bring cooked food. And that let people come from work and still get to the meeting and not waste a whole evening. Not wasted, that's probably not a good word, but not spend a whole evening after they've already exhausted from spending a whole day at work. And they were efficient committees. They got the work done in a reasonable time and had some social time as well. And I remember two of the potlucks. One was all macaroni and cheese, different kinds, but all mac and cheese. And one was all orange food, mac and cheese, Cheetos, orange slices. So unusual events. Yeah.
Well, so another question is, were there any momentous events that occurred at Prairie or in American history that affected Prairie or you?
Yeah, I don't know if it affected Prairie, but we're just looking that up to see what it was. And it was the bombing of Libya. And I just know I was so scared and watching that on TV all alone at home. And I called up the Nettletons and said, "Can I just come over and sit with you this evening? I'm just too scared to be alone." And they said, "Sure, come on over." I'm sure there was a lot of discussion, you know, after that at Prairie, but that was the one time that was available.
Yeah, I remember the social events, to go back to your previous question. I remember being at some dance, I think it was a public dance somewhere, and
oh,
I remember
yeah.
having a great time dancing with you.
It was Take Back the Night.
Is that what it was?
I think it was, yeah. Yeah. I'd forgotten about that. Yes.
Well, so are there any other things that you want to recall about Prairie? Maybe compared to the tell us about what you've done since. I know you've gone to some other churches to be, you became a minister.
Yes, I'm an ordained UU minister.
Talk about all that?
Sure.
Now, was
yeah.
that as a result of the time you were at Prairie?
No, that's the result of growing up. By the time I was 7, I wanted to be a priest. And Catholic women didn't become priests. So, but when I left Prairie, we were actually at a district meeting or a regional meeting probably when I got the phone call that my father had just died. And so I went home and packed up. And by the time I hit the Illinois border that same day, I said, "No, now I can become a minister." So that was...
Or you could go to a different denomination or church. Is that what you're thinking? Or?
Well, no, they knew that I was a UU and that I was the DRE there. But I didn't dare try going to seminary.
Oh, when your father was still alive.
Yes, but once he died, I mean, instantly, I just knew that I could do that now. And I was already committed to UU. That was not an issue. And to the values and the theologies of that. So I went to a Presbyterian and Methodist seminary, but that's okay. We can, as long as it's a legitimate seminary, we can do that. And I worked with two small churches in Iowa while I was in seminary, so the whole time I was going to school. And then I went in Clinton and Dubuque. And I was called their student minister, but they didn't have ministers, so that was it. And then I moved to St. Cloud, Minnesota, and while I was there, I also worked with Fargo and also with Wilmer, Fargo, North Dakota, and then Wilmer, Minnesota. So none of them were full-time. They were all part-time. And then I worked also with River Falls. That's the only Wisconsin church that I worked with. And what I learned at Prairie, I took with me. I kept trying to convince them, different churches, to try the three-person rotation in RE so that the teachers wouldn't burn out. And I used a lot of the ideas and the concepts about intergenerational services and how to involve the kids and how to make it active and so on. I love giving sermons. I didn't think that would be my forte, but it kind of is. And I just love the whole process, writing them, designing them, and delivering them.
For a service.
That would be cool. I would love to do that.
Hey, can you think of any other questions you want to ask Bob or Barb?
So when did you become a UU? Because you were raised Catholic, right?
Yes.
So when did you flip and become a UU? And it sounds like your sister did also.
She beat me to it. And I knew about UU before she even became one. But I lived out in rural areas and just couldn't. I mean, I knew about Prairie and First Society, but I was over an hour away, and I knew that I wouldn't get involved in the community. I could show up for Sunday services, but that's not the part of it that's important.
Oh, so where did you grow up?
I grew up in the Quad Cities, Davenport, Iowa, Moline, Illinois, but at this time I was living in Janesville. So once I moved to Madison, that's when I could actually join. Mm-hmm. But I'd probably known about it for 10 years before that. Tried very hard to find the Whitewater group, but they had no public identity
yes.
in Whitewater.
Yeah.
Nobody knew about him.
And then I think the guy who was organizing it finally passed away.
Did he?
I'm sure they probably succumbed at that point.
Yeah. I understand there's a church in Janesville now, but it wasn't there when I was there.
So when did you know that you weren't a Catholic anymore?
Actually, while I was at Catholic University in Washington and studying philosophy. I was pushing to try to stay Catholic. I even did some organ playing and a little bit of RE teaching after that, but I knew that it wasn't for me. That there were just too many things I disagreed with, just theologically and socially. And this is the Vietnam War and the beginnings of birth control, and those are, you know, real issues among Catholics. So yeah, it was social issues as well as theological. And that's one of the things I loved when I got to Prairie, found these people with similar values, you know, who'd talk openly about that kind of thing.
You played piano and organ mm-hmm. and a number of congregations?
I'm retired from ministry and from teaching, and I am the church pianist at the Minocqua Church. And I had, my first job ever was as a church organist at the Catholic Church, and I sang.
So if we come
daily
up to
Mass,
Minocqua, you're there.
I'd be there, yeah. Oh. Yep. Yeah, come on up.
We've gone to that Minocqua church.
Have you?
Oh. No, on vacation.
We have,
yeah. Well, be sure you let me know when.
Wait, you didn't talk
again.
About your teaching career.
Oh, my teaching.
Why you went to teaching from
Well,
ministry.
I fell into it, actually. Some another UU minister in the Twin Cities had been asked to teach world religions at a community college, and he couldn't do it, but he said he thought I knew about it, so. The school called me and said, would you teach world religions? So I did, I think, one semester or 1 year. And then they discovered that I had the whole philosophy background, because that was my original graduate work. So then I started teaching everything. And world religions was always my specialty, but I did a lot of ethics and medical ethics. That was wonderful. I did not talk about UUism when I was teaching. I thought that was not fair. But if at the end of the semester, if the students said, still wanted to know what I believed in, then I would explain about Unitarian Universalism. And being able to read the principles to them was very helpful.
Well, I think you told me earlier that one reason you went from ministry to teaching is because of you couldn't make a living.
Money, right, yeah. Yeah, I was actually at the River Falls Church very part-time when this opportunity to teach came up. So once I got to at least 60% time at the college, then I could afford to do it.
While you were teaching in the Twin Cities, were you involved with the UU congregation?
I was very involved, not as a member of a church, but actually when I was still out in St. Cloud, the United Church of Christ Seminary it's in a suburb of the Twin Cities, was looking for somebody to teach UU history and polity or administration because it's an ecumenical seminary and they had a lot of UU students. There were many adult students going back to seminary then. And so I taught four cycles at the seminary and it was every other spring. And then each 2-year period, I would also then have a student minister that I would be supervising in their internship at one of the local churches. And so that was my involvement with a church, that I was supervising them and, you know, heard all their stories and went to see them at their churches. And, yeah.
So, did you ever attend the Unity Church in St.
Paul? I did, quite a few times, yes.
Yeah. Robert has a connection with the former minister there, right?
Yeah.
With Roy Phillips, really?
Yeah. He and I dated in college.
Ooh.
Briefly.
Okay. Your claim to fame.
But we knew each other. He ended up marrying his wife that I don't think they stayed ultimately together.
I think I met her early on, but I don't think they were together when he left there.
Yeah.
He had a very long ministry there, like 25 or 30 years.
Yeah. I think, you know, I'm not sure if he had any other. Maybe he did before that.
He might have had a short one before that, but he did not afterwards.
Yeah. He was definitely the leader of the UU Christians.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And not too surprisingly, our first date was going to King's Chapel in Boston.
Well, at least you got to go there.
when we meet at district or at the GA, we joke that you know, if we'd gotten together, we'd be divorced from each other instead of our respective spouses.
Right, you're divorced anyway.
Because he knew my ex-husband too.
Oh,
and we were all in college,
all at school the same together. Time. Yeah. Well, in the Twin Cities, there are three big churches: Unity, which is pretty close to Christian, and then First Unitarian, which was very humanist, and then First Universalist,
right,
which was not Christian but pretty spiritual and religious.
Right.
And then a lot of suburban small churches, and it was the suburban churches that I worked with, so two or three of them.
Whereas his one brother goes to
First Universalist.
His
brother goes to First Unitarian.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
And then a good friend of mine from school was the music director at First Universalist for years until they moved to their...
They went to the Jewish temple
they
traded places
like
with
the
him.
First year or two there, but he... And then he went to the Swedish, I think.
Oh, an ethnic church, like an ethnic Lutheran church or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know that one. But,
yeah. Yeah. So we had to learn Swedish. I think was it Norwegian? One or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
One of the services was English and one was Norwegian.
Wow.
So then to be at this, you know, to know when the organ was supposed to come in, you had to learn Norwegian.
So do you want to mention where you live now?
I live on the edge of Minocqua, Wisconsin, in the Northwoods. I had wanted to go there we'd been going there vacationing for at least 40 years, and I always knew I wanted to move there. As soon as I drove up there the very first time, I knew that. And it took me a long time to be able to retire to do that. But, yeah.
That's so cool.
And the church you go to is?
Northwoods Unitarian Universalist Fellowship.
In
Monaco? Well, it's technically in Woodruff. Yeah. Yeah. And about a year after I got there, the person who was the pianist, and it was an incredible musician, was losing her health, and so she resigned, and I kind of dropped into the piano position, sort of like what happened with the DRE at Prairie. I just, the right timing to be there.
Is that a volunteer position?
No, it's technically paid. She didn't get paid because she refused to take the money. She wanted the church to have it, but I need the money, so I'm going to take it. And I do preach there 3 times a year. I'm the co-chair of the care committee. Since there's no minister, that's the organizational structure for providing pastoral care.
And we have a caring committee. I don't know if we had one when you were there, though.
No, I don't think so.
But we definitely do now. And every member is assigned. I don't know, are there about 4 people on the committee, and every
six.
So each one is assigned a certain number of people, and they let the person know in advance, you know, right away.
Okay.
That
you're my person.
I'm your caring person, so let me know if any problems or issues or anything you want to talk about.
Yeah, ours is more open-ended, but that's because, you know, some people might feel more comfortable talking to you versus to Barbara, and so the person gets to choose which person to contact.
Oh, well, I think you can go to anybody, you know, if you
probably
with yours.
But those assigned people are going to kind of check in with the members.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'd be good.
And they may have chosen, you know, the people because they know them better than somebody else knows the other people. Like Erin Bosch is my caring person. And,
okay.
You know, I've worked with her a lot over the years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Yeah, the congregation up in Monaco is elderly, and so there are a lot of health issues, and a lot of the medical care has to happen in Marshfield, which is hour and a half anyway. Yeah, and then often there's an overnight a surgery or something will be mostly done down there, and so there's a lot of driving and taking people to appointments.
So the caring committee does, or the care committee
might, or you,
sometimes
or
the, will either range that or step
right.
in or something.
Yeah. And we try to be available if somebody needs that, but most people would pick the friend that they know well first, and then if nobody was available, then they'd call the care committee.
I can't remember if there were any children at all at that congregation when we visited.
There are 2 teenagers now. They did have a very large child population, but they're growing now. In fact, some of them are actually coming back as adults and joining the church now. A couple of them have done that.
Yeah, they had it didn't seem like when we were there, they didn't have any RE program, but they had a fully functional, ready RE space in the basement.
Yes. Right?
Yeah, ready.
Yeah, very nice space.
Cool.
Yeah, and when there are kids, one person was kind of, had volunteered to be the RE teacher, so if there were kids there, she would take them downstairs and do lessons with them. It's not happening right now because there are no children except these teenagers who would just as soon be in the service.
Oh.
Yeah.
Anyone else have questions or further questions?
You have been part of a recorder group. Has that performed at the congregation?
Yes. Yeah. Actually, quite a bit. When we had 2 of the people who were the recorder players moved away now, and 2 of them are summer people anyway, so we're down to just 2 of us. But before that, we played maybe 2 or 3 services and did quite a bit, like at the holiday service, like around Christmas time. And the music committee arranges for special music every service, and it would be a prelude, an offertory, and a postlude. And so we have semi-professional musicians doing that, and the recorder group have done that. We also only meet every other Sunday, and that was an early decision just based on size and, you know, how much effort it takes to put on a service when there's no professional leadership.
So how many people are in there?
Probably 80 or 85 members, and 35.
Summer people and summer winter people. And
yeah.
So 30 or 35 attending?
Yes. In the summer, might be, I think we had 45 last service. So, yeah. Pretty decent, so.
Yeah.
You own your own building or rent?
Own the building, and it's completely free and clear. There was, when I first visited them, they were meeting in the community building in town. And I would guess within 3 or 4 years they bought land and then built a building.
Yeah, it's a beautiful setting.
Yeah, and then built on, and so there's a number, an addition now. And in the woods, they own maybe 2-3 acres, I think.
That's great.
And keeping it as tree-laden as possible and also have beautiful gardens. Not planted flowers, but kind of like yours, perennial garden. And they have a memorial garden there as well, with ashes buried and stones marking where people are.
Yeah, we've thought about doing something like that, but haven't.
Yeah.
I went
to a memorial service for my aunt in the church there in Delaware, that they have a memorial garden, and her ashes were just buried there.
Yeah. There might be more of an issue in a city like this, because we're outside the town. Yeah. Because it's a church, and it'd be a church cemetery. Yeah. People really appreciate that they know that's where their friends are, they know that's where they're going to be buried. It's only ashes, no bodies. But
that's a good idea. Yeah. Patty, did you have any questions?
Let me say one thing that we talked about earlier. When I was teaching at the seminary, one of the students one time came in and said, I have a college friend here with me visiting, and she is a UU. Would it be okay if she sits in on a class? And I said, oh, sure. It turned out it was Jennifer Drapkin from Prairie Society, and she'd been probably 6th and 7th grade or thereabouts, 7th and 8th, when I was here. She recognized me. I didn't recognize her, of course, but it was so fun to see her. Yeah. So any contact like that is a wonderful thing.
Well, so here's a question. Do you remember any of the people, I know you've named a couple of people by name, but, you know, Prairie people who really are part of your memory,
yeah,
and also by name.
Yeah, the Bullens, because they greeted me at the door the very first time I came there. But then they also were so warm and kind, you know, on and on and on that way. The Nettletons, partly because of their kids, but Eileen was she was involved, if not the chair of the RE committee, and I got to know them, spent time with them. There was somebody else from the, whoever became the RE director right after me.
We just looked that up.
Who was
Haglund? After, no, that was before, Dale Haglund. It was after. Anyway, she, once I announced that I was leaving, there was nobody who was volunteering to do it, and finally the committee went and decided this is the best person, and they begged her to do it, and she made all kinds of arrangements so that she could do it. And a couple of weeks after that, somebody who had years of experience
as a... Allison McKee.
Yes, that's who it was. Yeah.
Oh,
Allison.
Allison McKee.
Yeah.
Oh, she was excellent, too.
Yeah, I'll bet.
She was, yeah.
Well, you were excellent. You know, we would have kept you forever if you could have
I would have stayed. I would have, yeah. But a couple of weeks after Allison said she would do it, a professional DRE came and said she wanted the job, and the committee was kind of divided about whether she should get it or not. And my opinion was that they had begged Allison to do it, and so she should be given the job, and there shouldn't be any question.
Well, she was a homeschool teacher.
Right.
She homeschooled her kids,
and yeah,
she had a lot of excellent ideas.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah, I just ran into her husband not too long ago.
Yeah.
He recognized me. I did not recognize him.
And the man was...
They kept Allison. Upshot?
Yes, yeah. And also became it. I know she didn't stay a long time, but yeah.
Well, they decided to go back to the Catholic Church, I think.
Oh, they did? Oh, wow.
Well, to that, yeah, to the, I think, John the 23rd.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think that was part of it. Anyway, that was what I heard.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe it was Dale and her husband, Brent?
Brent Haglund, yeah.
Okay, was he with... The land conservation, yeah, they were involved, and you, Mary, I mean, being on your program committee. Yeah. The person, Briggs, did you say Mike Briggs, who did some music?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and then the man, oh boy, I wish I could come up with the names, I can picture these people, but he recently had been divorced and the judge required him to move to the city and get a regular job, not be farming out west.
Oh, who would that
be? He had one daughter, I think just one, who lived with his mother, with her mother. I remember he threw a Super Bowl party, and there wasn't a whole lot of interest in Super Bowl, so I was the only one who showed up.
Really?
Halftime, we went out skiing.
Had a girl, not a boy.
A little girl, yeah.
He's going to look in the directory to see if...
photographs, you have the names.
Just a lot of the kids. The kids just really stood out for me, because I saw them every week. And
them.
Right, yeah. Probably especially the older ones, the ones who were in the AYS, right? Yeah,
six,
yeah.
The ones that were in the
AYS, yeah, yeah. That was a little bit more intense connection. I remember. I think it was the K-1-2 class. There was a section on death, and the teachers asked me to come in and to teach that part of it. That they were not real comfortable doing that.
Oh,
and who was the the man who was a union organizer, a labor organizer.
Jack Jones.
Yeah, you said his name earlier. So, yeah, Jack and Betty, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And did they have a couple of grandchildren in
this?
Yes,
the, I really,
the little redheaded
Lily,
girls.
Yeah, yeah. Lily and Claire.
Yeah.
Was very redheaded.
Yeah.
And curly hair. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Curly.
Yeah.
Yeah. They would have been very active. At
yeah.
Point.
Yeah. You want to shut this off and find other people or?
I mean, I can always edit blank spaces out if you...
Okay, I'll take a look at that.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate, I've learned a lot of things that I didn't know.
Yeah. Well, we filled in a lot of gaps.
Yes.
Right, yeah, for your history book.
Now, somewhere I had the impression that you had been a nun.
I had
time.
Been, yes.
Oh, well, tell us about that.
This is my whole biography here.
Yeah, sure. That's what I thought I had remembered.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, well... Because Catholic girls couldn't be priests, I became a nun. And right after high school, I entered the Benedictines and was actually kicked out. I would never have talked about that way. At the time I was at Prairie, I was just too embarrassed about it all. But it was in the days of absolute authority, and the person who was in authority over me was mentally ill. She spent my whole first year in a mental hospital, and then came back and started doing... mind games, I guess. I mean, there wasn't anything physical or anything, but it was really a bad situation. So, yeah.
And you couldn't just switch to another order or anything.
No,
you had to, it was like in or out.
Yeah, yeah. I could have later on, but by that time, my theology was changing a whole lot. You know.
So right out of high school. Huh?
Yeah, yeah. I was 18.
So
18
how long
to 20.
Were you in there?
2 years. Yeah, a little bit over 2 years. Actually, 2 years to the day. But the rest of my group had made their first vows. And I knew that canon law was silly. If you made vows and then left, you could never join another community or go back to that one. So I didn't make vows just because at that time I still thought I could become a nun. But by the time I finished college, my philosophy and my theology had all changed enough. That
were you going to college at that time?
I was taking classes while I was in the convent. Yeah, they taught some right there. I got a lot of theology and music credits and that kind of thing. But they also tried to make sure that all of their order got educated. So whoever had some expertise would teach something in summer school. Speech,
was this
mathematics.
Was this
No, it was in Nauvoo, Illinois.
Oh. I don't even know where that is.
It's on the Mississippi River, a couple hours south of the Quad Cities. Yeah. It's where the Mormons crossed the river.
Yeah, I was just trying to think. You
yeah.
know, the Nauvoo rang a bell. Of
yeah,
some sort.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's it. They lived there for a few years, and then that's where they left to go to Utah.
I thought I remembered that.
Some little snippet there, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the curve of my life, I'm 72 now, the curve of my life has all been the same. It's just had these weird little blips and leaps and
Well, and it's all been kind of in the same direction. I mean,
yep.
even being a nun,
yep.
still moving along that same path.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It just your theology kind of changed
right.
and switched along
had to
the
switch.
Way.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it, you know, in terms of being interested in theology and philosophy and
mm-hmm.
I mean that's all very consistent.
Yeah, the same
it's just
content.
The way it manifested or the ideas
yeah.
that you had around that changed.
Yeah. When I was a little kid I wanted to be wise when I was old.
So. Well, there you go.
See, I am, of course.
Philosophy is wisdom, right? There's
it is,
wisdom
right.
in philosophy.
Yeah. Yeah. There's also the music curve, but because I said I think my first job was as a church organist, and now I'm the church pianist. We don't have the organ anymore, so that's yeah.
You've come full circle.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Yeah. Yes.
This is fun. Lots of good information.
That's all right.